I had a prediction in this scene that didn't come true, but I wish that it had. It would have been my favorite line award if it had. But, like, Evelyn being just like, I found this book, and Tony goes, I actually read a lot of different kinds of books, and I was hoping that Tony would go, have you ever read a book, Evelyn?
You should try it sometime.
You should try and read a book, because you might, you know, be a little bit more educated.
Oh my god.
Hello and welcome to Our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey, I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact for this episode is, what book would you like turned into a comic book? And I feel like if you pulled me throughout my life, I would say Harry Potter, but unfortunately I don't want J.K. Rowling to get any money.
You know what that is?
So, like, do I want a Harry Potter graphic novel?
Gross.
Yeah. Do I want a Harry Potter graphic novel? Hell yeah. In fact, I would, honestly, I feel like I would rather have that than this random TV show that they're making.
Like, 10 years ago, that would have been amazing.
Right. But since I don't want J.K. Rowling to have any money, I have been listening to the audiobook of the Hunger Games prequel. It came out in 2020, and I don't know where, as if I needed stuff to do in 2020, which I did. I don't know where I was, but I'm about halfway through, and it is so good. I saw the trailer, and I was like, oh, I better get on that. And now I'm like, where have I been?
I feel like...
Where have I been?
We knew about it, but because it was about snow, we were like, oh, I don't know if, like...
I was like, meh.
That's for us. And then the trailer came out, and I'm like, oh, got it. It's not entirely about snow.
Yeah, and I'm reading it, and I'm just like, it's so good. It's amazing. So, I'm gonna go Hunger Games. I think that would be a dope graphic novel or a comic book.
That's a really good choice. I support this entirely.
Like, I feel like it would have to be a graphic novel because the reason why these Brad Raybury things are working is because they're short stories. They're short stories, which is why they can be turned into comic books. But The Hunger Games would have to be a graphic novel, I feel
like. Oh, yeah, it definitely has to be a graphic novel. You're completely right.
Yeah, yeah.
And my name is Brittany Ray, and I have COVID, so that's why I sound like this. It's very sexy of me.
But what a freaking trooper. She's here. She's amazing. She's my hero.
The things I do for Riverdale. Actually, no, I do it for me and Rob, but I don't do it for Riverdale. I am 33-year-old artist and writer. I like badass moms and long naps. I'm on Twitter at Britannia, where I can be found attempting to be interesting. And you know what? It's not even talking about my cat. I can be found arguing with people.
Yeah, literally.
My form of stress relief is arguing with people on Twitter.
Yeah.
And the book that I would turn into a graphic novel, this is like my standard answer for questions like this because I want everyone to read my friend's book, is in fact The Rewind Files by Claire Willett. If you haven't read it, you have to. It is set in the 50s, but it actually addresses the issues of the 50s and 60s instead of like whatever's happening here.
Yeah.
And it's a really good, it's like a time travel like caper, I would guess. It's so good. You have to read it and it would be an amazing graphic novel.
Yeah, it would. That would be so cool.
So that's my answer. And today we have words to say about episode 706 of Riverdale, Peep Show.
Yes, and our step-by-step notes for this season were written by Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, who was a fantastic guest for the last two episodes, and we do appreciate it so much. Everything she does for this podcast means the world to me.
Thank you, Blanche. Thank you so much for pinch hitting.
Perfect. Gorgeous, beautiful. I love it.
I'm so sorry for the amount of sniffs you're going to have to cut out. I'm so sorry.
Dude, no problem. In fact, I'm just going to say this right now, you guys. Sorry for the sniffs. I don't have that much time to edit these, so I'm leaving most of the sniffs in. Keep the sniffs. It's a whole thing. And also, if my dog barks, my aunt is cleaning the eaves troughs outside. So if my dog barks, also sorry.
Dilly said, what the hell?
You're getting a slice of life. It's a slice of life into our lives right now. There you go.
Fantastic.
Enjoy. So the title is called Peep Show. It is a British television sitcom starring David Mitchell and Robert Webb. It follows the lives of two very different dysfunctional best friends who share a flat in Croydon, South London. Sounds like us, Binny.
It does sound like us.
Mark is a socially awkward and despondent loan manager, while Jeremy is a childish slacker, an unemployed musician who lives in Mark's spare room. Honestly, that we're both of them each. Like, each of us are both of them. I relate to both of them.
Also, I feel like I remember hearing about this show. This is jogging something in my brain.
Well, last episode we looked it up and it's like the longest running comedy on that television or that channel or something like that. So,
oh, that makes sense.
I guess. All right. Last episode we were chock full of thoughts from listeners. I have yet to get a thoughts from listeners this episode. So we're going to scoot past thoughts from listeners and go on to Tutor Boot.
Okay, you go first. I need to hear your opinion.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a toot.
Okay.
I liked it. I had a great time for most of it. And especially because I didn't really care that much for last episode. I'm just thrilled. And also, I love Ted Sullivan's episodes most of the time. So, yeah.
I'm going to give it a 2. Not because, like, I overly enjoyed the episode.
Yeah.
But because I got Shoni content and...
Yeah.
You know, this late in the show when the quality has gone down... That's really all it takes. But,
absolutely.
Yeah. Ted did an okay job. I have some fucking notes.
I have definitely enjoyed other Ted episodes more.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah. That's when you told me Ted wrote it, I was like, oh, great, then I'm gonna like it. And then I got there and I was like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
You guys, can you believe it? Storylines for the first time this season? Not going chronological? Amazing.
Not sure. Not the first time.
Well, the first time that we've covered them.
Oh, I was like, what are you talking about?
In storylines and not chronologically this season, yeah. Because they're finally that separate.
Yeah.
Rather than constantly going in and out of each other, so.
Agreed.
You guys, usually Brittany does Blanche's step-by-step notes, but obviously she's, her voice hurts, so
no
sorry if, sorry is gonna be me talking a lot. All right, you guys, so we are gonna start with Jughead. So, our episode begins with Jughead once again reading comics. He notices how similar some of the comic stories are to one of his favorite author's story, the Riverdale version of Ray Bradbury, Brad Rayberry. I laughed so hard, I thought it was so funny.
It's definitely one of those American classic excess moments, and I love it.
Yeah, classic Riverdale. I got to watch this episode with my friend Meta. She came over, and we watched it together, so that was really fun. It was a great episode for that.
Does Meta watch Riverdale?
Yeah, she's watched Riverdale since we went to film school together, and she kept listening to the podcast even after I, like, moved away, and we weren't as close anymore, and she texted me and was like, I heard you're back in Red Deer. Do you want to watch Riverdale? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I want to watch Riverdale.
Oh my god. I was like, if Meta hasn't watched Riverdale, this would be a really funny episode to watch for the first time.
Oh no, has definitely seen it. Okay. Has definitely. So, the October Country is a 1955 collection of 19 macabre short stories by American writer Ray Bradbury. It reprints 15 of the 27 stories of his 1947 collection Dark Carnival and adds 4 more of his stories previously published elsewhere. So Jug immediately voices his concerns to Mr. Fieldstone and accuses Pep Comics of plagiarism. Fieldstone says he reached out, but Brad Rayberry never replied, so he just assumed he was dead.
Bullshit. He didn't reach out.
No, absolutely not. And I think it's funny that he's like, oh no, ours is November Country, so it's not November different. County. I was like, you couldn't even pick, like, another month? Sounds like Fieldstone is even less creative than the Riverdale writers, because at least the Riverdale writers picked a different month.
Like, I would ask how he got this job, but, like, he's a white man.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, he's not good at it.
Like, December Country? No?
Anything else.
Okay. Whatever. And I liked the part where Fieldstone did a rendition of It's All Coming Back to Me Now. I did enjoy that part.
Yeah.
Jughead goes to Ray Bradbury's house. No, Brad Rayberry's house. This is gonna be confusing the whole time. It's gonna be the whole time. Brad Rayberry's house, and introduces himself. Does he just live in Riverdale?
Okay, I was wondering this too, because, like, at no point does Jug go, oh, let me find his address. He just knows where this guy lives and then just went to his house.
Right, or like, let me go to New York and see him and find his address.
Did you notice his apartment is the set, is Jughead and Tabitha's apartment?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same set.
Blanche said that later in her notes, 100%. Yeah, fully. So, I guess it's just in Riverdale, who knows? They have zero sets left. I mean... You know, the Pep Comics office is the FBI office, so...
They were like, we're gonna get our money out of this because we're making this show for $2. And all of our budget is going towards hiring Molly Ringwald.
Yeah, which, correct. Like, rightfully so, you know? Yeah. So, Jughead explains that Brad Rayberry's work has been plagiarized by Pep Comics and encourages him to take action. He says they've stolen 8 of his stories and hands him the latest one, and Brad just takes it and shuts the door in Jughead's face. Jughead really said, Kate, time to betray Fieldstone. Off I go.
Honestly, good for him.
Yeah, especially after we've seen him be like, Fieldstone is my best friend and is the greatest writer of all.
Like, I'm happy for Jughead because Jughead's like, oh, you are not a good role model. I'm gonna go find me a different dad.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just constantly looking for new dads.
Mm-hmm. So, Bernie, Return of the King, Fieldstone and Jughead are printing the new comics with Jug's name on them. He's so excited about it. They're interrupted by none other than Brad Rayberry telling Fieldstone he knows about the plagiarism. They argue for a bit, but Jughead suggests that they give him credit and pay the adaptation fees. Fieldstone says, sure, $2 a story, and he'll compensate the ones he's already stolen. And Brad agrees, and they shake on it. That seems like not very much. So I looked it up, and guess how much $2 was at the time?
don't know, $20.
It was like $20. It was like 22 and a half bucks. And I'm like, for your stories that you wrote,
I'm like,
I would need like at least 50 to 100 bucks, I feel like.
Oh, I was like, no, you can have
more.
You can have each one for $200 minimum. And any reproduction or reprints, you're getting more money. Any like adaptations like into screen, more money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like, I wonder if like he can't afford a lawyer, so he's just like, well, I'll take what I get. But you know what? Brad, you deserve better.
This man's broke as hell because I think he's an alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah. Last episode, I believe it was, they told Jughead he was not gonna get his name on the cover. They said he could not have the cover, and now he's... Now it just is. So, okay.
Well, because the people who write this, they don't talk to each other in between episodes.
Exactly.
You guys, I don't know how I missed this, but now that I'm looking at it, we have like a look at the actual comic book that Jughead made. And this actual page that we're looking at here is from the Betty Beehive story. And I'm looking at it, I'm reading this comic, and the character's name is actually Betty. Straight up Betty in a ponytail. Like, Betty has been doxxed by Jughead in this comic book. Is anyone gonna talk about it? Hello?
I spent the whole episode wondering where I know this man from, the guy who plays Brad Rayberry.
Wait, where is he from?
And so I had to look it up. Well, he was in the Big Time Rush movie.
Okay, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I know. It is amazingly called Big Time Movie, but I want it to be super clear. And he also plays, like, a guy in a suit in that movie, too, so that's what I know him from.
All right.
And now Jughead's like, great, now I can keep working here morally. Yay!
Do you think this was Jughead's plan all along? Like, what was the end game here?
I mean, if I had to guess, I would think that he wants to keep working at Pep Comics, but he, like, can't work there morally if they're, like, literally plagiarizing and stealing. And so he, like, got a hold of him to... And I also feel like Jughead feels like he's a kindred spirit with, this author, right? Because Jughead's a writer, too. And he's like, if this was happening to me, I would want somebody to tell me. And so I think that what was supposed to happen happened. Okay. But, I mean, until it goes terribly wrong later.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So Brad and Jughead eat at Pop's and discuss how the new agreement will work. Jughead suggests that he could maybe adapt his stories and that it would be an honor.
What?
He fangirls for a minute and calls him an inspiration. Brad asks what Jughead's dad thinks of his writing, and Jughead says he doesn't know because he lives in Toledo now. He explains that a couple years ago there was a big robbery in town and he was the prime suspect, so he left town. Brad says he should write about his dad. Jug asks if he'd read a short story he writes about him, and Brad jokes with him but says that sure he would. I was so excited. I screamed. My heart stopped. Like, he has to come back now, right? They're setting him up to come back.
I mean, I feel like Roberto was like, there's a chance that we could get Skeet back, so start peppering it in.
Yeah.
And I have my clown shoes on.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Honk, honk.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
I want to believe.
I did love the moment where he was like, maybe you could have another, you could, like, make sure a good writer has it. And he's like you. And Jughead's like, oh my god, I didn't say that, but me? Okay, I had no idea.
That wasn't, like, my plan all along, but, like, that would be great.
Yeah, exactly.
So Blanche says the FP, where is Gladys, though? I'm guessing also in Toledo.
Yeah, we do.
Roberto, just tell me she has a nice life. In our timeline, the Pops robbery was pretty much why she left town. I want to know if Gladys and FP are together or what. Does Jellybean exist here? I don't think Jellybean exists.
Dude, I literally had a dream last night that we got a trailer and Gladys, Jellybean, and FP were all in it.
Oh my god, magical.
I'm just saying, like, maybe I'm an oracle. Maybe I know the future. I'm just saying. Manifesting.
Honestly?
I feel like if Jellybean did exist, we would have seen her already. Or we would have at least talked about her, you know?
No, exactly.
But then again, we're just talking about Dad right now.
I think that at most, because there's no way they can afford Gina Gershon and Ski all at the same time.
And Molly Ringwald.
Yeah.
And yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree.
But it's like, I think at least Ski, but I don't think Jellybean exists. Otherwise, we would have heard that Jughead had a little sister before now.
Yeah. Oh, Charles, I await you. I await for Charles. I do.
I don't.
It's not happening, but...
It would happen if we were back in our regular timeline and watching the show that we signed up for.
Yeah. Well.
I don't know.
So Jughead is sitting at his typewriter looking at a picture of the man himself, FP, with his bike and his little 50s clothes. And he puts the photo down and starts writing. We got to see the photo. I screamed. I died inside. I was so happy. I literally, like, at the commercial break, FaceTimed Sam.
Yep.
To show her the picture and everything. Very exciting.
I walked in on YouTube FaceTiming each other, and I was like, wait a minute, are we getting Skeet back? And my clown shoes are on.
Like, it's got to be Photoshop, right? Like, he didn't pose for that, obviously. I bet it's, like, a Photoshopped...
It's definitely a Photoshopped, like, thing from a previous season.
Yeah, I think it's, like, a promo image from a previous season Photoshopped, if exactly. I had to guess. Yeah, yeah.
Like, and it wasn't that bad a Photoshop job. I have seen them do much worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Blanche says, the outfit, oh my god, his little hat is so cute. Ross, I'm begging you to show me Gladys. I want to see her 50s look so bad.
Didn't see this coming from Blanche.
I want this for Blanche so much, because I think she'd just go over the moon.
I think she would just be happy with her... being mentioned. We don't even need to see Gina Gershon. Obviously, she wants to, but, like, we can't afford.
It's true.
We cannot afford. Yeah. So Jughead shows Dalton and Ben his name printed on his new comic, and they're very excited for him and ask if he wants to go to Pops and treat them to burgers. But Jughead declines because he's going to Brad's house after school and still lives in an abandoned train car, you know? He's like, I can't really afford to buy you burgers also. This is, like, kind of my thing.
Like, do they think he can afford it because he has a job?
Like, he's like, yeah, but can you give me, like, a couple months in this job to be able to afford it, please?
Well, I mean, the cost of living was not nearly as high. So I bet he made...
That is true.
...a burger in, like, one day.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
or an
fair.
Hour, actually.
Yeah. It's nice to see Dalton and Ben. I like them.
Every time we see Dalton, I'm, like, tripped up. So I'm like, is that Dalton? Is it him?
Sort of.
Kind of. Not really, yeah. But, like, maybe.
Kind of. He was the original Dilton, the exactly. OG Dilt. So Jughead brings in his new short story to Brad, and they're interrupted by the kettle whistling, and Brad goes into the kitchen to make tea. While he's gone, Jughead finds an unpublished story of his and sneaks it into his bag. Jughead,
Why did he do this?
What are you doing? I honestly, I had this, like, sneaking suspicion after Jughead literally was like, no plagiarism. I honestly thought Jughead was going to steal it to, like, put it out under his own name. I really did.
I mean, I kind of understand thinking that, because...
Yeah.
Everything else that he does here is absolutely baffling.
Yeah, yeah. Blanche also noted that this is Jughead's apartment last season, but Brittany noticed that too, so we've already talked about it. Jughead's out here wearing a lot of turtlenecks, and I just want to know what's wrong with Cole's neck.
It's just the classic Jughead fit.
I mean, I guess that's true, and it's also, like, seems to be really cold outside every time they have a scene outside.
Well, it's Vancouver.
Yeah, exactly. So it's called... The Jupiter journals, but then it's circled and there's, like, a little arrow that says something title. I'm just like, if you're trying to write something, can you make it legible? Like, me and Meta, like, paused it and, like, tried to decipher what the heck it said, and we could not figure it out.
I think it's like it probably says temp title.
Like temporary or like something like that? I don't know. I genuinely, like, we could not figure it out. Anyway, first of all, Jughead, why is he snooping in the first place? Like, he literally sits down and opens, like, a private little nook he has. Like, I'm like, just sit, man.
It was the absolute audacity to end up at your favorite writer's house and the first thing you do is start going through their stuff.
Screwed up. Not okay, man.
No.
And it's weird because, like, the original Jughead in the original timeline has literally talked about Fahrenheit 451 before, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
So it's, like, weird that now suddenly Ray Bradbury doesn't exist and he's Brad Rayberry. So.
I'm sorry. Are you expecting continuity from Riverdale?
It's Riverdale!
You gotta get it together, man.
You're right, I'm sorry. But this is a reference to The Martian Chronicles. It's a science fiction fix-up novel published in 1950 by Ray Bradbury that chronicles the exploration and settlement of Mars, the home of indigenous Martians, by Americans leaving a troubled Earth that is eventually devastated by nuclear war. Sounds pretty cool. And it is a novel when he usually posts... Jesus Christ. He publishes, like, short stories and stuff, so...
Yeah.
I guess I get it that he, like, hasn't published it yet, probably because he's nervous, because it's not something that he usually does, I guess.
I am a little curious where this storyline's gonna go, because... I'm, like, a little worried that Jughead's gonna go too far here.
Yeah, in what way? What do you think he's gonna do?
Like, go behind his back and submit it to a publisher.
Mm-hmm. Right, like, later he's literally like, I can get this published, I can help you. And I'm like, what can you do for me, random teen?
Exactly.
What do you mean I can help you? I'm a full adult, already published author.
If anything, you can help him, and you wanted to, and then he stole, and...
Yeah.
And just broke so many... social rules and boundaries.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about it real quick here, but, like, you know, this Brad guy, he freaks out. And we'll get to it soon. But either way, I'm just like, Jughead, we don't steal from people. And also, will he not notice? Like, I guess he only did it over one day, so he didn't see it. But I'm like, why are you doing it? Why, though? Just to read it early? I thought maybe he was going to try and make a comic book out of it. Like, I had no, like, why?
I also would like to know. Motive unclear.
The stakes are too high. You can't do that.
I don't know. Motive's very unclear.
Yes, yeah. So Jughead reads Brad's unpublished book, The Jupiter Journals, and he loves it. And yeah, I guess my theory about this was that he was going to try and publish it himself. I really thought he was going to.
I hope that he doesn't.
I'm glad that he didn't, but...
I don't know. Yeah. Like, I think we're probably going to see this sort of storyline continue, but yeah. The entire time we were watching it, I was just bummed that, like, Jughead gets this really cool narrative, like, fun storyline, and Betty and Veronica are
stuck in the sex storyline.
Stuck in a lingerie storyline. Like, it just sucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get that. So Jughead returns to Brad Rayberry's house and tells him he read his unpublished book and he loved it. He says he needs to get it published, but Brad is disgusted that Jughead stole his draft and he kicks him out and calls him a thief. So this is what Blanche said about it. She said, girl, calm down. Jughead is a child and Brad is acting this way, breaking glasses and yelling. Not to be defensive, but he was literally complimenting him. And I do think that that is an argument for this, but I'm also like, in what world, Jughead, is this a good idea? And you think this would be okay to steal something from someone? Like, I understand why Brad is upset. It's an absolutely upsetting thing that happened. Does he need to, like, break glasses and stuff in his own house? Maybe not, but I get why he would be upset about that.
I think, like, my theory was that he was supposed to, like, echo, like, who FP originally was.
Oh, okay.
If that makes sense. Like, he's, like, like, this guy who drinks too much and has a short temper sort of energy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm right, but, like, that's the vibe that I got from that little breakdown.
I mean, it's not like they've put a whole lot of thought into this Brad guy's character or anything. You know, there's not a lot of insight to be gathered there. But, like, if I had to make it make sense to myself, I understand why he would feel, like, betrayed by what Jughead did. Because Jughead showed up and was just like, you shouldn't let people steal from you. And then Jughead, in turn, came to his house. He trusted him. And then he also stole from him. So I guess I just feel like it makes sense that maybe that's a trigger for him or something, you know?
I mean, I wouldn't be overly impressed with a kid who was like, someone stole from you, but it's okay when I steal from you. Bro, no.
Exactly. So Mrs. Thornton hands a comic to Dr. Werther saying she confiscated it from Dilton, and she points out that it was written by Jughead. Pretty sure Mrs. Thornton is the teacher from episode one, and that's upsetting to me because she was, like, really nice and good in episode one, and now she's bad because she steals comics. Jughead sadly looks at his newly printed stack of comics next to a Brad Rayberry book, and that's the end of the storyline.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly, like, it sort of felt like this was, like, the only Brad Rayberry episode, and then, like, after the end of this, I was like, oh, I guess maybe we will see him again? I don't know.
I think we're definitely gonna see him again.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Shoni. So, Cheryl approaches Tony and says she finished the book that she lent her. When asked her opinions on it, all she can think of is that she liked the cover. She says, two women just look good together, and that it's voluptuous and aesthetically pleasing. And I mean, Blanche agrees. Yeah. Tony invites her to the dark room so they can talk about it privately, but she declines, saying she has practiced with the River Vixens. I was surprised that she had finished the book so fast, but I guess, like, she just probably just couldn't put it down. So excited about it.
100%.
Yeah. And this just reminded me of in, like, season 3 when Cheryl, like, really wanted Tony on the Vixens. So I like that we're sort of bringing that in and peppering that in as well. The price of pepper.
I like that Tony...
the cost of pepper? Yeah, the cost of pepper.
Tony fell for it so fast.
Yeah, for sure.
She was like, oh, I'm gonna allow you to manipulate me into this.
For sure, I will be manipulated, no problem. So Cheryl is about to start cheer practice when Tony walks into the gym holding blue and gold pom-poms. Evelyn Evernever starts to say that she's not on their list, but Cheryl quickly reminds her to shut up because she's the captain. She asks Tony to show her the routine she's prepared, and she does so in another unnecessary sexy montage. Cheryl loves it and offers her a spot on the team, much to Evelyn's dismay. I was so excited to see Evelyn. I screamed. It was incredible. I loved it so much. Aren't you, like, 30?
Okay, literally, I was...
Is she still, like, 30?
I was like, all of these women are in their 30s.
Yeah.
And they look it.
Is Evelyn canonically still 30, though? You know? Like, she was 26 in season 3.
Probably not.
So I'm like, is she a real teen in this one? Who knows?
I think yes.
I'm just like, Evelyn, where's your father husband? And can you go back to him instead of annoying us, please?
Not father husband. Get out of here.
It's true.
Oh, that's so upsetting.
I thought it was really cute how Midge got, like, did a little wave at Tony when she came in because, you know, obviously they're friends. Many dramatic moments have been had with Midge and Tony recently.
I'm like, can Midge be a fruit too?
Yeah, Midge? Yeah. Please. I feel like everyone around Midge is a fruit, so I feel like Midge could also do it. Please.
Exactly.
And Cheryl says the Razz the Berries thing again, which is delightful, and Sam absolutely took that as her favorite line word again.
As she should.
Hilarious. So Evelyn visits Cheryl to share her concerns about Tony joining the Vixens. She says everyone knows that Tony's into girls and that she wouldn't be comfortable sharing a locker room with her. Cheryl jumps to Tony's defense saying that it isn't true and to keep quiet about it, and then she kicks her out because she wants to watch the new Oh Miha.
No homophobes allowed.
Truly. And it's like interesting that Evelyn is like close enough to Cheryl to be at her house.
Yeah, she must have, like,
you know, like they could have done this at school, but
that's a good weird point.
And yeah, my first note was just Evelyn homophobic. Yeah, I saw that coming. Yeah.
Yeah, what a groundbreaking concept.
Was not surprising. We still have no lipstick Cheryl, and she's not, like, Evelyn calls her a lesbian, and she's actually bi anyway. So she's actually a member of the bisexual community, if you remember from last season. So
exactly. Well, she even says it later in this episode.
Don't get it twisted. Yeah, which was nice. And Cheryl wants to watch the new Oh Miha. I love that she's like a stan, but she like probably doesn't tell Veronica that. That she loves it.
I didn't think about that. Like, just...
I love that she was like, and you're not invited to stay and watch. You're not, so
when
go
is
home.
Veronica gonna find out how much Cheryl loves this show?
Yeah, how much she loves her parents. She's like, actually, can you get me an autograph / meet and greet? That'd be great.
Cheryl would rather eat glass than admit that.
Literally. So Blanche said, I think it's real bold of Evelyn to be so homophobic when she throupled with Alice back in season 3. I would want her and Alice to be together this season because in our timeline, she's almost 30. It annoys me that they put her back in high school for the 50s plot. Also, where is Edgar? Yes, all of those questions, I agree.
Oh, I hope Edgar's dead somewhere.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. God, remember The Rocket?
If they can't afford Gina Gershon and Skeet to come back, they certainly can't afford Chad Michael Murray at this point.
Hundo.
We will never see Edgar again.
God willing.
Do you remember the good old days when we saw it when Chad Michael Murray was there, like at the end of the episode, like clapping for the I think it was Heather's at the time?
Yep.
And she's like, there's my dad, and it was Chad Michael Murray. And I just like, I know I said this at the time, but I so wish that no one had known that Chad Michael Murray was coming in to play, because that would have been insane.
Like the jaw drop of, is that Chad Michael Murray?
Is that Chad Michael Murray?
What,
yeah, oh, that would have, yeah. So at the dark room, Lizzo asks Tony if she's a River Vixen now just because of Cheryl, and Tony proudly tells her that she's actually Riverdale High's first ever black cheerleader. Lizzo calls her whip but says she doesn't blame her and leaves. Hey, Lizzo, gross. She calls her, to those of you who didn't watch it, congratulations. She calls Cheryl a cherry lollipop and then says that she would lick her.
Yeah.
Gross.
She also says that
horrible, terrible.
Tony being the first black cheerleader is political. And I was like,
right,
shut up, you stupid bitch.
She's like, the only reason you wanted to be a River Vixen is for politics, not because you like Cheryl or because you like being a cheerleader.
I'm like, which one's more acceptable to you then?
Right. Lizzo, I don't care for you, I must say.
I do not either.
I don't care for you. So in the girls' locker room, Evelyn looks through Tony's things while she's showering. I hate Evelyn. She finds the Cost of Pepper book and reads the summary, taking it as confirmation that she does like girls. Tony comes to her locker in a towel and asks Evelyn what she wants. Evelyn says Cheryl told her she wasn't into girls, but the book proves otherwise. Tony says to mind her own business, but asks exactly what Cheryl said about it.
She's like, shut up, but also tell me everything.
I honestly, yeah, I had a prediction in this scene that didn't come true, but I wish that it had. It would have been my favorite line award if it had. But like Evelyn being just like, I found this book, and Tony goes, I actually read a lot of different kinds of books, and I was hoping that Tony would go, have you ever read a book, Evelyn?
You should try it sometime.
You should try and read a book because you might, you know, be a little bit more educated.
Oh my god.
I really wanted her to say that. I thought, I was like, that would be my favorite line award if she had said that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
And then Tony once again says, can you dig it? And I'm just like, all right, I've had enough with the can you dig it. And then later she says, I can dig it. And I'm like, okay, enough with the digging.
Excuse me.
It's a lot.
These writers have a very small repertoire of
vocabulary.
Playing, okay.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. If your character is going to have a catchphrase, we got to use it sparingly. Okay? We got to use it sparingly or else it stops losing. It loses what it actually means.
Agreed.
So, enough with the digging. So, Tony confronts Cheryl in the locker room later, furious at her for telling Evelyn she doesn't like girls. Cheryl explains that she was defending her reputation. Tony says Cheryl doesn't get to define her, she doesn't need a savior, and she's done wasting her time on Cheryl. She starts to leave, but Cheryl stops her and tells her she's right and admits she's attracted to girls, and she's also attracted to her, and Tony is really happy at this revelation. So, I really liked Blanche's note about this scene, so this is what she said. This scene made me really upset. If it was present day, I wouldn't be upset at Tony, but the fact of the matter is, it's 1955, and she's acting like this. Cheryl really was just protecting her, and she did not have any malicious intent. It was so dangerous to be gay in the 1950s, and Tony doesn't seem to realize that. The fact that she's so out and proud is terrifying to me as a lesbian, and she could literally get hate crime, and Cheryl definitely realizes that and was actively trying to prevent it.
I had a hard time with this scene because it seems like Tony is just behaving as if she is modern day Tony.
Yeah, exactly.
And so Tony's issues are our modern day issues, and they keep trying to, like, do these morality lessons just with these two. And it kind of drives me crazy because, like, they'll half commit to certain social issues in this show and then they chicken out. So, like...
Exactly. I mean, literally last scene in the storyline, Tony's just like, I'm the first black cheerleader. And now that she comes in here and she's just like, I want everyone to know that I'm gay.
And...
Or I'm bi, you know?
Exactly. And, like, I'm concerned because does this mean that we're heading towards a storyline where something really bad happens to Tony because... she is so out and she has to learn a lesson on how to be
I don't want
to
see that
quieter and how to be back in the closet, or are they just pretending
that would suck
that, you know,
it's fine,
you can interpret these issues through a modern lens, but then a few scenes later talk about how difficult it is to be out in the 50s. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
And this is why, again, the flaw with this episode is that a man wrote it.
Yeah.
Like, due respect to Ted, but, like, every storyline that isn't Jughead is full of cliches and weird assumptions about how women behave and how we talk to each other, and especially with sapphic women, it's just anachronistic in the oddest way at the oddest time.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, and it really reminds me of what Veronica was saying last episode with Jughead's comics that he was writing. Except, you have an actual point, because these aren't, like, weird horror stories in which people are bad and doing bad things. This is the actual, supposed to be the actual canon of the storyline. Because we thought Veronica was completely off base because she's like, everyone is, you're making all these women evil. And Jughead's like, everyone's evil, it's horror.
And it's like, yeah, oh.
You know, but this is not that.
It's not. And while I understand Tony's argument, Tony also understands how hard it is to be gay in the 50s. So the last thing, the last, like, normal reaction that she should be having is immediate anger at Cheryl for trying to defend her. And that's why, like, it pisses me off, because then it paints Cheryl as, like, this innocent little thing, and Tony is, like, this, like, bitchy black girl. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I don't know. It was just disrespectful. But it got to where I needed it to be, which is Cheryl... being like, okay, yeah, I like girls, but it also feels like this was kind of bullied out of her, which is also annoying.
Yeah. So, I did want to say about this scene that I think that Cheryl looks really nice in this really, in this blue and plaid outfit. It's really pretty. And I think she looks really nice. Tony says that they have a problem, and, Cheryl goes, oh yeah, Midge, right? I was like, what? So I wondered if Cheryl knew about the pregnancy or if she's just being mean. Because Midge seems fine and nice and, like, waves to Tony and everything. And I'm like, be nice to my friend Midge.
No, Cheryl definitely knows.
Come on. Yeah. I also had, like, a feeling that, like, Evelyn was, like, peeking over her head over, like, those showers and stuff, fully listening. And she was going to, like, do something about it. But I'm glad that didn't happen, because it's nice to just let them have that moment rather than, like, tinging it with, like, worry and foreboding.
Yeah. You know?
And then, yeah, just all episode, everyone's just having really super personal moments in this change room. This change room's getting a lot of action.
Yes, it is.
That's for sure. So at the dark room, Tony and Cheryl have coffee. She learns about Kevin and Clay. She also tells Tony about her Aunt Carol, which is another reference to The Price of Salt, who Penelope had a falling out with when Cheryl was younger. She moved to Greenwich Village to be a lesbian writer. Cheryl says when this all happened, she started realizing she was also gay, but she thought she could never have what Carol did. Tony tells Cheryl that she always knew she was bi, but when her parents caught her kissing her girl neighbor, they kicked her out of the house. She lives with her grandma now, who more or less approves of her. Cheryl says she always felt like she had to play a part, and that's why she and Archie were together. But now she's ready for something different, and they hold hands.
It's very sweet.
That's nice. I did like this scene.
Me too.
This scene was better done than the last one. Blanche noted that this is the first time that we've ever heard about Tony's parents, which is crazy. You know, we had heard about her grandparents before.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we've seen them in, like, season two, I think. But this is the first time we're hearing about her parents. I also was surprised that suddenly Penelope has a sister.
Yeah, where did that come from?
Is that just in this timeline? Because, well, they got her from the Sisters of Quiet Mercy, right?
Yes.
That's what the Blossoms, like, purchased her from the sisters.
Yeah, she was an orphan.
Yeah, so, okay, sure. I guess, you know, it's Riverdale, so I'm gonna just walk past it, but I'm pretty sure that goes against your previous canon. And they clearly named her Carol because, you know, that's the character in The Price of Salt.
Yeah.
I honestly thought that Cheryl was gonna name drop Heather here, but instead Tony name dropped a girl that she used to have a crush on as a kid.
That's right, Heather.
And I thought her name was, I thought she said Glinda, and I was like, the Good Witch? You kissing the Good Witch?
Maybe so.
Ariana Grande?
Maybe so.
But then on Netflix, I looked at the subtitles and it said Glinda, and I was like, boo.
Honestly, I want to go...
Let her kiss the Good Witch.
I want to go with your narrative here.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So I looked her up. I thought it might be a comics character, like Easter egg, but it doesn't look like it is.
Okay.
Boo. You know, Tony says that she digs it again, and I'm just tired of the digging. And I honestly thought that before Mary finally stood up to Frank, I was like, Tony's grandma equals badass MILF. The Baddest MILF Award, I guess? I don't know.
I never even considered that, but like, yeah, all right.
I guess. So Cheryl tells the Vixens their assignment for the season. She says Tony's the new top of the pyramid, and Evelyn protests, saying she's always the top. Cheryl says she's welcome to quit if she disagrees, but Evelyn decides to stay after a moment of consideration.
It is a testament to her acting that Evelyn Evernever is the most punchable person in this show.
Truly. Truly. Like, yeah.
Every time she talks, I'm like, shut up! Shut up!
Yeah. It is. It's true. And Zoe was in Orphan Black for a while. And so I knew her from Orphan Black before I saw her in Riverdale. And yeah, she's always been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Very punchable.
Affectionate.
Great work.
Yeah.
Affectionate. Absolutely.
Yeah.
When I was watching it, I thought that like some of the girls in the background looked a little bit familiar. Me and Blanche did some sleuthing to see if, because I remember Cheryl had those two cronies in like season one. One of them was named Ginger and I can't remember what the other one was named, but I was like, is that them? But yeah. Me and Blanche could not confirm whether or not these background actors were Cheryl's original cronies. But if it's revealed that they are, you heard it here first.
That, honestly, I will be so impressed.
Right?
I kind of want this for you now.
Uh-huh. Right? Me too. In the locker room after practice, Tony tells Cheryl how nice it was that she defended her from Evelyn's backlash. Tony asks if she can show her appreciation, and Cheryl says, yup, and they make out. My only note for this scene was just, take that, Lizzo.
Yeah, I love winning.
Screw you, Lizzo. Yeah.
Tony's like, my gaydar is immaculate. Do not ever question me again.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, because like, we really liked Tony and Fangs last season, but now that this is back, I'm just like, this is better.
It's better, though. Like, we made it because we had to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But, like, if it was up to us, it would have always been... The thing with Shoni is that they got really weird and toxic towards the end.
It's true, exactly.
Like, when Cheryl trapped Tony in the house with yep. Jason's dead-ass body and a creepy doll.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yep.
That wasn't sure good. Do.
No, it wasn't good, and it does make me happy that they've sort of, like, now that Midge is, like, you know, alive, Fangs has been sort of paired off with her, so, like, Fangs is still happy, and that's what's important, you know? It would make me sad if Fangs was just, like, alone, and, because like, Tony is with Cheryl again now.
Yeah, and, like, pining or something.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So the next storyline is the Archie storyline, but real quick, I'm going to talk to you guys about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theafficionados, and we accept monthly donations over there, and you get some pretty cool stuff over there. The $1 level is just early access to all of the podcasts. A lot of people think that it's like extra worth it for weekly podcasts like this one. You guys, $1 equals 4 episodes of Riverdale that you get early access. I'm just saying, a quarter for each episode for early access feels worth it to me. And I also have a 1 month free trial of that tier, also available over there if you want to check it out. $2 is our Discord server where you can watch along live with me and Blanche and Dave in particular, who are there every week. Yeah, it's the best. $5 is 10% off at 3 different small businesses, mine, Brittany's, and our lost co-host Casey's. If you can't help us out on Patreon, just check out those small businesses because that's another way you can support us and you get something cool in the mail. And then our $10 level is our Patreon-only podcast, which is called Okay, Love You, Hi. And we talk every 2 weeks for about 45 minutes about whatever we like, and we update people on our lives, and people seem to really like that too. So yeah, if you can't do any of those things, just recommend us to a friend, because that's free, and we really appreciate you guys for listening either way.
Thank you.
Thanks. Love you. All right, so Archie. Oh boy. Archie tries to work on his car while Uncle Frank, I just want you guys to know that in Blanche's notes, she put a puking emoji next to the words Uncle Frank every single time in these notes, and I respect a commitment to the bit, especially when it's about how crappy Uncle Frank is in the storyline.
Like, she was right for that.
Yeah. Archie tries to work on his car while Uncle Frank breathes down his neck. Uncle Frank then it's hard, now the emoji's messing me up. Uncle Frank then shames Archie for his grades, horniness, and other BS. He also says he's not pulling his weight around the house. He forces Archie to recount his last moments with Fred when he left for the war, when he told Archie to take care of Mary. Uncle Frank implies that Fred wouldn't be proud of him and says it's time to start being the man of the house. He literally shows up and says, Archie, you all around suck.
I'm like, Uncle Frank, do you want to catch these hands?
Truly.
He's like, Archie.
Uncle Frank, is it time? Isn't it time you died?
Isn't it time you died?
Like, yeah.
Archie's been doing so great. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, we need a storyline where Archie sucks, actually.
Yeah.
Just so that we can show how, like, toxic parenting works, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you need to do that, why don't you just...
I'm like, please don't be mean.
Have everyone show everyone how Hal parents.
So Blanche said about this, because we know Blanche hates Uncle Frank. He is her least favorite character in this entire show. And so Blanche says, the absolute nerve of this man, I loathe him. Take Fred's name out of your mouth, bitch. Although it's pretty clear to me what they're doing here. In some of the comics, Fred was unfortunately a lot like Uncle Frank is in this timeline. He was a real hard ass and absolutely nothing like the loving character we came to know in Riverdale. However, this does not stop me from hating Uncle Frank any less.
Exactly.
It does make me happy that they're not making Fred out to be this way. You know?
Yeah.
So, like, it's great that if they need to bring in somebody like this, that it's Uncle Frank and not Fred, but it still sucks to watch.
It sucks because, like, it is the epitome of, like, boomer parenting.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah,
like, the tough love parenting. And I was watching it, and I was like, I don't wanna watch this. I don't like it.
Literally, I know. Uncle Frank forces Archie to apologize to Mary and promise to be a better son, and then says the next day they'll talk to Featherhead about how to get his grades up. I really, like... It was actually, like, quite funny to me for Archie to be there, and then, like, Uncle Frank with his arms crossed was in the background every single time, which was really funny, kind of. But also, if I was Mary, I'd be like, I don't know if this strong-armed apology is very sincere, you know?
Exactly.
Like, this doesn't actually mean anything to me. But thanks, I guess?
Not only that, but, like, Archie always has Mary's best interest in mind. Like, he loves Mary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
He loves her. Yeah. So, just like Uncle Frank said, the next day, Archie tells Featherhead that he's trying to get his grades up, while Uncle Frank looms irritatingly behind him. Featherhead says, okay, nice, leave so I can talk to this menace. Archie leaves him and Uncle Frank alone together. I honestly thought that he was gonna be like, Uncle Frank, I want to invite you into my villain meeting that we had last episode with Clifford and Werther's, and you're part of the villain meeting now.
Bro, I knew immediately that he was getting offered a job.
Yeah.
That's how easy it is for white dudes.
Right, and also, like, that's very Riverdale of them to be like, and now your parent works here.
Yep.
They always do that.
But, like, this is exactly how people got jobs back in the day. And that's why they think it's that easy now.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Stuff is just handed to you, of course.
They're like, just give out resumes and they'll call you and you'll have it.
Exactly. Stupid.
Can I tell you a very niche anecdote?
I'm going to allow it.
Do you mind?
Not at all.
So Archie says, I swear on a stack of Bibles that I'm going to double down on my schoolwork and get my grades up. And then later he says something about gosh or like heck or something. Like Archie's very, I mean, I guess like he's like, Uncle Frank is mad at me and also is a Christian, so I don't want to. Archie's like very religious for some reason this episode. But I thought that was very funny. And it reminded me of an extremely very niche song that like nobody else knows about. It's called That's the Truth. It's by Paul Brandt. He put it out in April 1999. He's fully a Canadian artist. Like, not that many many people know about him, probably. He's the one who sang Alberta Bound, which is like...
I'm Alberta Bound.
He's like classic Alberta boy, right?
Yeah.
And he has this song called That's the Truth, and I will now be performing the chorus.
Okay,
so it goes, I'm coming home to see you, baby. You're the one thing that I know for sure. In a world that's going crazy, you're a matter of survival, my heart and soul. Revivals wear on a stack of Bibles, cross my heart, and I will be here for you. And that's the truth.
Thank you so much.
But then, so he said, I swear on a stack of Bibles. And I said, I know that song. I know a song about that. There's a thing that happens in a song I know.
I was not expecting.
So anyway, no one else knows that song, but enjoy this niche Albertan country song.
Thank you.
There you go. Anyway, it's just another strong-armed apology, and Featherhead's like, okay, thanks, bye.
Well, that's what they think respect is just scaring people into doing what they want.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing, is that, like, you're talking to the principal. The principal's not in the class with you. You know? The principal... I work in a middle school, y'all know this, and, you know, the principal does a lot of hard work, you know? It's really important, and, you know, a lot of big, big picture stuff is what the principal is doing. Mm-hmm. But the principal's not in the class with you.
No.
The person who you need to promise to, like, be better in class and stuff is your teacher.
T.
They're the ones who are, like, who your grades and your attitude and your behavior matter to, and they're the ones that this, like... it affects.
But like,
so who you should be talking to is your teacher. I know why they're not, because nobody knows their teachers, but
if his teachers are female, it doesn't matter.
Brittany, that's such a good point.
Thank you.
Brittany, that's such a good point.
Thank you.
100%. And also, we don't really know any of the teachers other than Mrs. Thornton, and she means nothing to us, so it makes sense why it's Featherhead. I'm just saying that, like, that's why Featherhead is like, okay, because it doesn't matter to him.
No.
You know?
He's like, great. Had no idea that was even happening, actually. Anyway, do you want a job? Okay. You seem like a strong, capable man.
Yeah, exactly. You seem...
Do you know anything about basketball? No, that's fine.
You seem good at telling teens what to do. Come here.
You seem forceful. Would you like to go for a drink?
Yeah. So, Archie...
You're actually quite aesthetically pleasing as well.
I like your weird mustache that nobody else seems to like, but I'm into it.
What's with the mustache, dude?
It's so bad.
Like, Ryan Robbins is such a good-looking dude, too. Like, why did this happen?
Yeah, I know. I'm really sorry, Ryan. I am. I'm sure you're a very nice person. I'm sorry you have the worst character ever.
Everything I've heard about him, because, like, he lives and works in Van, is that he's a lovely man.
Yeah.
Sorry that you have to have that on your face. And if it was your idea, reconsider.
Yeah, right. So Archie, Uncle Frank, and Mary have dinner together. Uncle Frank tells him that now that the war is over, Featherhead is bringing back the Bulldogs, the basketball team, and says he was hired to be the captain. He tries to get Archie to join, but he declines. Uncle Frank forces him to contribute and says, fine, he'll be the water boy.
Can I just say, a heartbreak that we'll never get another football scene.
Straight up. And, like, obviously Coach Clayton's not here because... I'm trying to remember, because, I mean, Weatherby can't be the principal because he's black, but I don't think we have any black teachers right now.
I don't think so either. Like, they have integrated students, but they don't have any black support staff or teachers or anything like that.
Correct. At least that I have seen. We do have Dilton's dad as a teacher, so that's, like, a person of color, but I haven't seen anybody else, if I can remember, like, unless I'm misremembering, so... Yeah. So that's why we don't have Coach Clayton. But I'm also like, where's Coach Cleet? So you're just talking about Coach Cleet's last episode. Where is he?
He died.
Or did Jughead just make him up? I don't know.
No, he died.
Yeah, oh, he died. Dilton killed him too.
Exactly. You understand.
Archie's like, yeah. Archie's like, yeah, I don't really want to be on the basketball team, not because I feel bad and it makes me feel weird about my dad, like I say later, but like, I just don't want to hang out with you, Uncle Frank.
If that had been his real reason, I would have been like, he's never done anything wrong in his life.
Exactly. Also, like, I feel bad for Archie. He's like, I'm getting mixed signals. What do you want me to do? He's like, well, I've been told to worry about my studies, and now you're asking me to do all these extracurriculars. And he's like, okay, even if you, like, say no because you want to go on your studies, I'm still going to take up your time anyway and make you do something humiliating.
Yeah, it's that toxic, like, man of the house, you have these responsibilities kind of bullshit. Not understanding that the reason that an entire generation of men are completely burnt out and don't know how to express themselves emotionally were that they were stretched so thin that they couldn't be parents.
Yeah.
But, like, they thought that built character. Like, it's all about building character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. And also, being the water boy isn't even a humiliating job. It's just that everyone treats them like crap. Like, every job is important, you know?
You know what I think?
All right.
Get your own fucking water.
Yeah, exactly. You can go get it.
Like, I never had a water.
Why do you think you guys, like, deserve somebody to do that for you?
Why do you need to be waited on hand and foot, bitch? Get your own, bring your own water bottle.
Julian.
Yeah. Ugh, useless.
Uncle Frank stole Archie's car, and he says it was a distraction and that he'll get it back when his grades are better. I'd be like, my quality of life goes down every time you talk to me, Uncle Frank.
Literally, this line in Jurassic Park, where Hammond is watching Jeff Goldblum on the screen be obnoxious, and he's got his head in his hands, and he just goes, I really hate that man. And that's me every that's single, I'm just staring at the screen with my head in my hands going, I really hate that man. Because I do, because if I could pluck every hair out of that man's stupid mustache, and he and Julian, both of these men, I would remove all of the hair from their heads individually until they cried.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I'm sure you're very nice, Ryan Robbins.
I know Ryan Robbins is nice. I have no problem with Ryan Robbins. I have every problem with these men.
Uncle Frank, my note is, and I quote, Frank, I will kill you and your dumbass jacket.
Exactly.
You look like an idiot in that jacket. You look stupid. You're stupid.
You look dumb as hell. And also, what are your qualifications to coach basketball? I have not seen a single qualification.
Yeah, truly. Meta, me and Meta, when we were watching, Meta goes, last time the coach was mean, a bunch of people got beheaded. So maybe watch out, Uncle Frank, which I thought was a really good point.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Yeah, Dilton literally killed people last episode for being mean to him, and so you better be good. Thanks.
I mean, cautionary tale, but also manifesting?
Well, that's what Jughead said. He's just like, they're all cautionary tales. They have morals. Be nice.
Manifesting, maybe Uncle Frank learns that lesson. I don't know.
Exactly.
Because he's clearly not going to, we're not going to get he and Alice when they both had brains being in a romance.
No, gross. Like, I do not want to see that.
Okay, but like, remember when they were both like briefly good people and we were like, oh, this is an attractive ship.
Yeah.
We lost so much in the war.
I know, truly. So, Blanche said, Uncle Frank is such a bitch. The way it's morning time in the scene.
Uncle Frank, you little bitch.
It's morning time. It's morning time in the scene. Archie walks into the garage with his backpack, ready to drive to school, and Uncle Frank follows him in just to see his reaction.
Bro, that's boomer parenting.
He sucks. Boo. I hate it.
This is exactly that kind of crap that, like, I expect from these people.
Yeah. Yeah. So Archie is indeed forced to be the water boy at basketball practice, and Julian's being a pain, not throwing away his cups and making Archie pick them up. I hate Julian. He'll never be good. I don't know. I at first I was like, oh, maybe he'll have a what's the word?
Redemption.
Redemption. I said reputation. And that's not it. Redemption.
He could have a redemption arc. He could lip sync for his life.
It's true. Yeah, that's true.
You know what?
But I don't see a redemption arc.
I will allow Julian to be redeemed if he does a Silky and Nutmeg Ganache style, like, round robin SmackDown tournament lip sync for his life.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Nicholas, the guy who plays him, would be up for it.
Actually, I fully see that.
I was like, I can't remember who we thought it should be with, but I was like, if Julian turns out to be gay too, I'm interested.
Didn't we say it was Reggie?
Oh.
I don't remember, but I feel like we were like, where's Reggie? He should be boyfriends with someone.
Oh, maybe it was. Reggie's coming soon and I miss him so much and I'm so excited to see him. Although I'm really confused because they say he's like some random farm boy and I'm like, isn't this not supposed to be comics?
Reggie's supposed to be rich.
Also, you know what they're doing? You know what they're doing, Brittany?
What?
Julian is Reggie.
Oh, that makes sense because Reggie's supposed to be...
Julian is Reggie.
Robbie. Like rich and spoiled.
He's a bully, yeah. Oh my god. How did I not see that before? Julian's totally Reggie.
Okay, but like work though, because that means that we get to, like, because like as annoying as Reggie is, I also have such a soft spot for him.
Yeah, himbo, little baby.
So like if we get like a storyline where like he doesn't have to be a prick, like at the end of a storyline where he's been a good guy the entire time and then they have to like flip the switch, that'd be great.
That would be great.
Oh my god, or he's a wizard.
Right, yeah, he can do ventriloquism.
Maybe he's the one who gets them out of the 50s because he's a wizard.
Yeah, that'd be good. So Archie is cleaning up the gym by himself and he considers practicing some basketball moves, but then decides he's too sad to play basketball.
Bro, have you ever played basketball?
I mean, like in gym class, but not like on a team or anything.
Fair enough. I was, in fact, forced to play on a team.
That was me on soccer and softball.
Oh, yeah.
But never basketball. Not a basketball girl. And I guess my favorite note of this scene was that, like, shouldn't the keykeeper be doing this, you know?
I mean...
because he's the janitor.
Thank you for pointing that out. Because gee.
Because he should be doing it. And Archie's like, Julian Blossom's literally going to murder me.
Because he wants to wear my skin.
Because, did you watch last episode?
Yeah.
I loved the part where Julian was like, Dilton, we're gonna murder you.
What? The sound difference there was amazing.
It's because I leaned in. But, like, I loved the part where he was like, oh yeah, Dilton, if you don't get better at basketball,
we're gonna literally kill you.
You're gonna be murdered. We're literally gonna kill you. And so I love Archie being like, gets a basket and is like, but if I'm not good, Julian will kill me.
And he wants to take my head off.
Yeah, exactly. Use it as a basketball. Ugh.
I mean, it is orange.
Yeah. I mean, that is true.
I mean, like, just saying.
Yeah.
Like, just stating facts.
Blanche said about this scene, she said, I just wanted to point out that this scene and the Jughead one that comes after it has a song that had a line about someone's father leaving them alone playing in the background, and that's painful and sad.
There's this joke in the Star Trek fandom where you cannot serve in Starfleet unless you have daddy issues.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can be in Riverdale if you don't have daddy issues.
That's how they admit people onto the show Lost as well.
That makes perfect sense.
They say you can come in, but you have to have daddy issues.
Do you think that that has, like, any overarching commentary on the state of masculinity and male parenting? Or...
no.
No. I don't think it means anything. I don't think it means anything.
No, I don't see that.
No. No.
No, I see what you're going for, but...
like, I don't think it means anything.
Yeah. Uncle Frank interrupts Archie's morning by telling him he got Archie a job without telling him. Pumping gas at Pops, and he says this is what being a man of the house means. Frank,
bitch,
can you
what?
Communicate ever? Like, before 3 seconds before I need to know something? Can you tell me something? Like, you know, before I literally need to leave for more things that you're making me do?
Like,
he's literally like, being a man means you need to work yourself to the bone. I'm like, we need to protect Archie from toxic masculinity, and he needs to take care of himself. Like, he only has so much time.
Like, being a man means not having energy for any of the tasks that you've been given?
Boo.
So, like, how are you supposed... Ron Swanson literally said, you whole-ass one thing, you don't half-ass two things.
So true. That, Brittany... damn good point.
Thank you.
You're exactly right about that.
And he had a better mustache than you, Frank.
Exactly. Take that, Frank.
Thank you, Frank.
So Archie's working his new job pumping gas when Julian comes by to harass him. Julian, I hate you. Pop brings Archie a coffee. He brings up the basketball team and how he used to watch Fred play and that he was one of the best. Archie says they used to play a lot when he was growing up, right up until he passed. And Pop calls Fred a true hero, and Archie agrees. Oh yes, this is when he says, honest to gosh. He honest to gosh was.
May I just say, Pop and Mary are all the parents that Archie needs.
True.
Like,
do you hear that, Uncle Frank?
That's just tea.
You can go home.
You don't need to be here because they have it handled.
Bye. I do love how we keep bringing up Frank, like, oh my god.
Ah!
Fred. Sorry, I threw up a little bit. My bad.
Can you swallow that back down, please?
Yeah, thank you. I will. I do like that we keep bringing up Fred. I just think it's lovely that they, like, keep bringing him up, and he always has, like, they always have such beautiful, nice things to say about him.
I also like that, you know, because Fred isn't there, it does depict, like, Mary as a single parent, and, like, mm-hmm. the struggle of a woman to raise that kid, and, like, the choices that she makes, like, bringing Frank in, and then realizing, oh, you know what? This was a bad idea, and actually... I'm doing great with this kid, and I can handle it myself.
By myself. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Julian approaches Archie at school and tells him he smudged his car and that he should get him a soda. Archie refuses. Julian eggs him on, saying he's going to beat the record that Fred set, and they get in a fist fight. I thought this was so stupid because Julian's like, when I got home, there was a smudge on my car. If I was Archie, I'd be like, yeah, you drove the car after I cleaned it, so.
Yeah, like, what did you think was gonna happen?
You know, probably a bug landed on it and died.
Yeah.
Is that, that's not my fault, but okay.
Sounds like a you problem.
Dumb. Yeah.
But, like, Archie is very classy and says, like, bring it back.
Yeah, he's like, okay, fine, I'll come back and I'll do it again, I guess. You know, yeah, you're good. That's a good point.
Like, the kid has good manners. There was no reason for Frank to be called in.
Yeah. So, since Archie got into a fight, Mary arrives at the school and Uncle Frank approaches her and starts to open his mouth, but Mary reminds him that she's his mother and she will deal with it. And that was the best. And Mary, you now can have the, I assume, the Badass MILF Award.
Oh, of course.
Of course, that is your award to
oh no, Estelle. She gets it.
Okay, wonderful.
It's hers.
So Archie and Mary have a heart-to-heart, and she asks why he doesn't want to play basketball. Archie explains that basketball was his and Fred's thing, and it just makes him sad now. He says that if he played, he'd just be wishing Fred were there to see him. And he's also concerned that he might not be a good enough player and ruin Fred's reputation. Mary tells him that no matter what Uncle Frank says, Fred would be so proud of him, and she suggests that he gives it a shot, and that she'll ask Uncle Frank to chill out. Thank God.
It is a wonderful little musing on grief.
Yeah, absolutely. And great Mary content. I love, this is probably my favorite scene of this storyline, for sure.
I agree.
Because Uncle Frank wasn't in it.
Yeah. And Archie was allowed to talk about his feelings instead of just shoving them down to be a man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Blanche said, I love this scene, but why don't we just ask Uncle Frank to leave?
KT, like, we don't need this man.
Find another white man to be your basketball coach. He doesn't have to be here. Get rid of him.
I don't want him. Literally, Dad Keller could stop being a cop and would be a great coach instead.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was like the boxing coach or whatever in the regular timeline. He's got time. He's got time.
Exactly.
Until he becomes homophobic Keller, which is coming up. It'll be annoying.
Yeah, good point.
The thing that sort of made me laugh about this is that Archie is like, Mom, all the kids are bullying me, even though I look like an Adonis. I simply don't believe that this man is getting bullied, you know? You know?
I'm like...
He's like, I literally look like this and I have washboard abs, but all the kids are being mean.
Yeah, but it's kind of realistic though, because of course he's getting bullied because he doesn't have a lot of threatening masculine traits. He's nice to women. He's polite. He's well-mannered. Like, of course he's getting bullied by insecure men.
That's true. And like, Julian, have you not noticed that Archie gets way more girls than you? It's because he's a good person.
Exactly. But you try telling the Andrew Tate stands that, and they're like, huh? And I'm like, they don't find Andrew Tate attractive. They find Pedro Pascal attractive. Do you know why? Because he's nice.
Yeah. He's a good guy. Last scene of this storyline made me laugh even more. Archie walks into the gym and announces that he'll be joining the team. When Julian protests, Archie shoots a basket that he makes on the first try and nobody argues. He tells Uncle Frank that he's doing this for himself and his parents and not for him.
You, Frank.
Which is great. But I thought it was so funny that he walks in, sinks one basket and goes, any questions?
Kobe!
And I'm like, yeah, I have a question. Do you know how to bounce a ball?
No.
I have a question. Can you sink more than one basket?
Listen, if he can get a three-pointer from back there, it doesn't matter if he can do anything else, because it means that when you get into free throws, Archie will hit it every time.
Yeah.
And sometimes you win a game, you can win a game on free throws alone. So, like, a TBH, this worked for me as someone who played basketball.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But I thought it was funny that he's like, I'm showing no other skills. I'm on the team now.
he's a white dude. What'd you expect?
It's true. My other question is, where's Dilton? I know that he was only on the team in Jughead's story, but I want him here.
No, he's also dead. Thank you. I've just decided if they're not on screen, they're dead.
I hope not. That he was like, even if we just saw them earlier this episode?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I did love that Archie was like, I'm doing this for everybody and not you, Uncle Frank. Boo.
He called Frank a little bitch in so many different ways, and to Frank's credit, he did in fact accept it.
I do think it's funny, like, this episode is, like, far more explicit than we've done all season, and that's because it's about Uncle Frank and we hate him.
Oh,
most
yeah.
of the swears have been about Uncle Frank, and I think that's fair.
It is fair, because we're right.
Yeah.
Frank was a good character. Like, when Frank was, like, a nice guy, I was like, oh, I like this character. Like, I don't mind him. Mm-hmm. And then they made him evil, and then they made him even more evil, and then they made him this. And I'm like,
yeah,
little bitch boy with your ugly mustache.
Boo. I can't stand him.
Like, remember when he was brainwashed and, like, tried to kill Archie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Like, remember when he was under Percival's curse?
Yes.
But then he also wasn't under Percival's curse.
Percival.
Kept doing evil shit even when he wasn't cursed.
Brittany, the Cursival.
The Cursival.
Yeah. Yes, I remember. That sure was something.
I miss that.
All right, last storyline. We go to Betty and Veronica. So Betty's in her room. She sees Archie shirtless and gets real into it. And there's an unnecessary montage of KJ's abs. I thought it was kind of funny. I liked the music. I thought I laughed a little bit.
It is funny.
It just gets weirder though. So in the girls' locker room, Betty asks Veronica, what's sex like? And Ronnie reveals to her that she wouldn't know because she's never actually had sex. Betty calls Veronica sexy to her face. Veronica says that you can feel sexy without actually having sex. She explains that she does so by wearing perfume, heels, and lingerie. And then she suggests Betty comes over to try it out.
Bro, I hate this storyline with everything in me.
Tell me more.
Okay, I waited this entire podcast because, like, the minute I finished the episode, I texted my wife and I was like, that was so fucking stupid. because this is not how women are. This is how men think women are.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's the, what do you do during sleepovers? Do you, like, you know, get into, like, lingerie and have little sexy pillow fights? And it's like, no.
Yeah.
We stick our fingers in it. We stick the sleeping person's finger in water and try to get them to pee themselves. Like,
yeah, we put on face masks and then we tell secrets.
We tell secrets and we watch movies and someone gets traumatized.
And then we talk to each other and cry.
100%. Yeah. We do not be like, oh my God, you should try wearing lingerie. I'm 16.
Yeah.
Like, this is why I hate this storyline, is because all of these girls are so sexualized.
Yeah, 100%.
It's gross, and Ted, I hate you for this, and I used to like your writing, but after seeing this, I'm like, oh, right, you are, in fact, a man, though.
Yeah, sometimes I, like, wonder how much of an episode is the writer's room, and how much is the actual writer, you know what I mean?
I mean,
I wonder that all the time.
Given the dialogue itself in this, it's the actual writer.
Okay, that's fair, that's fair. Yeah. Why does it feel like Betty's fully into Veronica, though? Like, this is fully a Veronica scene.
No, but, like, I feel like it was supposed to be coded that way. Like, it was supposed to be seen by us, the viewers, as sexy, because, like, there's an air of, like, exploitation, and, like, it can be true that some women behave this way, but the way it was framed and the way, like, it's delivered, it's supposed to be exploitive.
Yeah.
And I don't like it.
As a virgin myself, the concept of virginity is a, just like Veronica says about the word nymphomaniac, it was made up by men to, like, force women into boxes, basically.
Yeah, of course.
The concept of virginity is stupid. And I hate when people use virgin as an insult and stuff like that. I think that's screwed up. However, as I was watching the episode, Betty asked Veronica what sex was like, and I saw Veronica's face, and I pointed to the TV, and I said, "Virgin! Virgin! She's a virgin!"
Literally, though.
I got it. I get it. She's a... And I was right.
Listen,
I was like, no, she hasn't done it. She hasn't done it.
You called it. You called it.
Yeah.
She talks a big talk.
Yeah, exactly. And I like the part where she was like, I've never actually done that with a boy. And I was like, with a boy?
Have you done it with a girl?
Question mark? Just wondering. Just wondering. Blanche said about this episode, Veronica, real. They are so cute. My little 16-year-old heart that only tuned into watching the show for the lesbian kiss in the trailer would be flying high. This scene made me so happy, even though wearing lingerie all the time would be crazy uncomfortable.
Exactly! That's why a man wrote it, because there's no way you're wearing that lace all the time.
Yeah. Fully, dude, when I tell you, like, I just get my underwear from, like, Amazon or, like, Walmart or something, maybe Costco sometimes, like, the underwear that I have bought from, like, La Senza or Victoria's Secret and stuff is never, it's not even more comfortable for me.
It falls apart.
It's more expensive and it's not even more comfortable. I'm good.
Like, some of the expensive stuff is fine, but it's like the lineless, like, edgeless stuff is the best underwear. Like, where it's like that really good breathable fabric. It's not lacy silk lace crap. It's not breathable. It itches. This is a bunch of crap.
Yeah. I agree. So Betty and Veronica are at the Pembroke, and Betty shyly comes out from the dressing room wearing lingerie. Veronica calls her sexy then, but Betty says she feels embarrassed. Veronica takes her to the mirror and says to just give herself a minute and get used to it, and emphasizes that she looks great. And she, like, does this whole thing where she's like, now tell yourself in the mirror that you're beautiful. And she's this whole monologue about what you should say to yourself in the mirror. And if I was Betty, I'd be like, ah, that's humiliating. No, I will not say that. I will not say that. Especially in front of you. No. I'm good, but thank you.
It's a cute little Veronica scene.
It is, yeah. It's nice, like, a little, like, a friend moment for them, I feel like.
I mean, like, and also, like, if you wanted to ship it, effortless chemistry.
easy, yeah, for sure. I'm so excited. Did you see what the newest episode title is that got released for 709?
No.
It's called Betty and Veronica Double Digest.
Those are the ones I used to buy the most.
I know! I'm so excited for that one.
Oh, that makes me happy.
Right? I'm like, oh, that's a perfect title. I love it. Veronica tells Betty that Betty Page herself would love it. I looked up Betty Page and she's like a model. She's like the pinup girl, basically. And she has the Veronica bangs. So she was like definitely inspired by that. I feel like Veronica herself, like from the comics, was probably inspired by her. You know what I mean? Like herself.
Oh, for sure. Betty Page was
back in the 50s.
Was a stone cold fox.
Yeah. And like Veronica, they like drew Veronica like that to look like Betty Page, I bet.
Oh, for sure.
And so it's really cool to see Veronica now like, reference that. I think that's really cool.
I agree.
So Veronica approaches Betty at her locker the next day and asks if she's wearing the lingerie. Betty says no, because they have gym class today and she doesn't want people to think she's a nymphomaniac. Veronica says that word was invented by men, but speaking of men, Betty should find a new boyfriend. She asks if Betty likes anyone, and to Ronnie's dismay, she says Archie. She's still supportive, though, and says she should go and ask him out. If I was Betty, I'd be like, I'm gonna be honest, it's truly none of your business what underwear I'm wearing. It's really not your business, I gotta say.
It's weird. It's so weird.
Yeah. I also, like, I laughed so hard when I was watching because she's like, oh, what boy do you have a crush on? And Betty's like, Archie. And Veronica also had a crush on Archie. But you ditched Archie to go and date Jughead. How did that turn out for you?
I mean,
how did that go? I thought that was funny that her face is like, oh, yeah, Archie. Ugh. This is what Blanche said about this scene. First of all, just date each other. I'm with you. Did you see how happy Betty looked when Ronnie was complimenting her? Also, I noticed a picture of a cat in Betty's locker, and I thought it was cute. It looks like it's maybe at Coop the Riverdale Cat on Instagram, who I highly suggest everyone follows because he's adorable. Once I read Blanche's note, I was like, maybe that cat is Caramel?
Oh, right, Caramel.
Is Caramel the name of the cat that she, like, put down or whatever? Yeah. I can't remember if that's what his name was.
It was a Caramel or Toffee?
I think Toffee was her cat's name after she, like, moved away after the... And then, like, she gave him to Glenn, gave Toffee to Glenn, and then never, and then, I don't know, Glenn died? Like, I don't know, where is Toffee? Who knows?
Oh, that's right.
But, I wonder if it's Caramel, and I wonder if she still killed Caramel in this timeline. Who knows?
I'm gonna guess no.
But also, I could never just, like, be like, hey, can you take care of my dog, please, for, like, a couple days or, like, week? And then just, like, never follow up?
Oh my god, no. Oh my god, no.
You know? Like, what? Whatever. They forgot about Toffee and, you know, it's Riverdale. Betty sits with Archie in the student lounge and asks him to the movies. He seems thrilled, but he says he can't right now because Uncle Frank is up his ass. But maybe in the next couple weeks? It was so sweet. It was so good. I love KJ so much. He's literally like, oh my gosh, buddy, I would love to go, but I can't. And of course, she takes it as being like, he doesn't actually want to go. He just made up an excuse. And it's like, oh, yeah. It was so sad.
The earnestness really sold it.
Because you know that he wants to. Absolutely.
Yeah.
KJ's always so earnest. I love that about Archie. And then so when he says that he can't, we see Veronica, who's listening in, and we see like a little smile. And I wonder if she's like smiling because he said that he wanted to or smiling because he said no. I don't know. That was unclear to me, but I hope that it was the nice one.
Agreed.
Betty cries in the music room with Veronica, thinking that Archie just made up an excuse so he wouldn't have to go out with her. Veronica suggests that they go out on a double date with some boys from Stonewall Prep. Stonewall! I am livid!
The minute they said that, I was like, Robin's gonna go insane.
I am livid! You could have brought Brett in. Imagine the moment where we see the boys that she's dating, and it's freaking Jonathan and Brett.
Yep.
I would have lost my mind!
Yep.
I would have lost my mind. You had an opportunity and you did not take it. You had an opportunity. And it's an all boys school in the 50s. I'm just so mad it wasn't Jonathan and Brett. I'm so mad. I'm pissed.
I knew the minute it happened, I was like, if we don't see his face, Robin will probably throw herself out of the window in that guy's office.
It's true. It's true. And it's just like these random dudes too. I was like, okay, I get that maybe you can't get Brett, but like not even like Jonathan. Come on. Just some dudes that we know. Even like, what if it was Moose? We knew Moose went to Stonewall Prep. I'm waiting for Moose to show up.
We'll probably get Moose.
Come on, y'all. I hope so.
Yeah.
It's interesting. If Julian is taking over for Reggie, it's like if Reggie is called this like farm boy guy, that like kind of reads Moose to me. You know, like I wonder if Reggie's coming in to be a Moose character. I'm really interested to see this new Reggie because we have like no precedent for what this could possibly be, so I'm interested and I'm excited to see him.
The farm boy thing would make sense.
Yeah. Where's Marty, though? Is he working at the farm, too? I don't see that for Marty.
Is he still abusive?
Probably. I would definitely see that. Yeah. Yeah. So Betty and Veronica are on their double date with the Stonewall Prep boys. Betty's date asks her why she's not on her parents' dancing show. She says it's too big of a time commitment. And well, good thing Uncle Frank isn't behind you making you do a bunch of stuff. Anyway... Veronica asks the boys what their interests are, and their answers drone out as Betty looks outside at Archie. Blanche is like, I would love to see this dancing show, and we're going to next week, which is exciting. But I was like, wait, it's RIVW's dance show, and we've literally never heard of this yet. And so these Walter and Willie, Walter says that they're in the Quillen Skull, and I'm like, Walter, that's a secret!
I know, he was talking about the Quill, I was like, don't you have to, like, die before knowing about that?
Are you gonna have to murder us now? Dang it. Oh, yeah, Walter, hey man, chill out. So Betty tells Veronica she felt no sparks between her and the Stonewall Kid and that her heart is still set on Archie. Veronica says they'll work it out. Romeo and Juliet did. Betty reminds her that they both died, but Ronnie says only after they smashed.
I mean...
Hey, Brittany, did you know how old Romeo and Juliet are in the play?
They're like 13.
They're 12, Brittany!
Yeah, they're literal children.
This is not funny or cute. I don't care for that.
But isn't it just like this show to be like, oh, we should make sex jokes about underage children?
Absolutely, absolutely.
all right, you guys. I was hyperbolizing. Juliet is 13, but Romeo is 16. Still, though.
And they're like, it's Romeo and Juliet, whatever. But, like, I'm just like, okay, well, if you had any, you know, reading comprehension, you would know that, like, Romeo and Juliet is not a play about love. It's a tragedy.
Exactly.
It's literally a tragedy because a bunch of people die at the end. And Shakespeare didn't write it to be like, star-crossed lovers. He wrote it to be like, look at these stupid-ass kids.
See, and there's actually straight up a lot of debate about that because that was the narrative for a long time. And now people are going back to, well, you know, maybe he was trying to write a romance, but the end result is that these children gave in, were one, at the pressure of a lot of societal stuff from their families.
Yeah.
And two, yeah, had a very immature idea of what love is and, like, suffered for it. And isn't that just what's happening in Riverdale?
Yeah. That's what's nice about, like, I like Shakespeare and I like his plays and I like that there's, like, a lot that you can glean from them. So yeah. But, Romeo and Juliet is, like, never the romantic comparison to make. Ever.
No.
It's a bad idea.
No.
So anyway, Veronica suggests maybe calling Archie late at night so they can talk and have some meaningful conversation, but Betty says that Archie doesn't have a phone in his room, and she knows because she can see right into his room from hers. Veronica's a little too excited about the fact that she's seen him naked before and says that she wants to see for herself. Hey, this is disgusting and bad.
Yeah, yeah.
This is literally, like, not good. Last episode we were talking about how, like, I mean, you know, it's a story that Jughead wrote, so, you know, it's not real. But, not that any of this is real, but, you know, Nana Rose, like, not telling Archie about the stuff with Cheryl, and then Archie sleeping with Cheryl not knowing about, like, all the information is, like, not good, and, like, pretty sexual assaulty, and, like, this sort of feels like that, too. You know, you're lucky that Archie was like, I like it, later. But, like,
I feel like
if he hadn't been, I'd literally be like, this is friend breakable. Like, this is, like, yeah, this would break us up as friends forever. This is really screwed up.
Because I feel like there was always an understanding between Betty and Archie that when they creeped on each other, it was kind of like they were both into it. Like, they were both kind of consenting to it because they were both vaguely aware that that's what was happening. Adding Veronica to the mix and then being like, oh, this is, like, fun and flirty. And I'm like, it's not, no, though. And the fact that Archie showed up was like, hey, I was uncomfortable. I was like, that's my boy.
Yeah. It was like, no, that's such a good point because, like, he knows that Betty's window is right there. They've looked at each other and, like, waved at each other and everything. And you know what? If Archie, like, gets changed in front of that window and forgets, then, like, at least, you know, he's aware and that's his bad, I guess, you know, for, like, changing in front of the window. And hopefully Betty doesn't, like, stare at him weirdly and she just sort of is like, oops. Which, you know what? Who knows? She probably is weird about it. Anyway. But you're right. Bringing Veronica in, that is, like, completely against, like, Archie has no idea that Veronica's watching him through that window.
It's against whatever understood code.
He knows that Betty at any given time. Yeah, he knows at any given time Betty could be looking through that window.
Yeah.
But not anybody else, you know? And so Veronica's like, I have to see this for myself. And Betty seems uncomfortable about it. And I'm like, yeah, both of you are in the wrong here. Betty shouldn't have let you come do that, and you shouldn't want to. It's exactly not good. Gross, yucky, bad. So Betty and Veronica do it anyway, and they're snooping out Betty's bedroom window. Veronica's being incredibly creepy, especially when Archie walks in and starts undressing. Archie notices them, though, and shuts his blinds, much to Betty's embarrassment. Yeah, I would be mortified. I would never be able to, I wouldn't be able to go to school the next day. I'd be so embarrassed.
I would fake sick. I'd be like, actually, I cannot face the consequences of my own actions. I gotta go.
Unfortunately, I've died. I have to fake my own death and move away to Toledo, probably.
Yeah, yeah. You will never see me again.
Correct. So Veronica references Rear Window. It's a 1954 American mystery thriller film directed by Alfred Hitchcock, and it's based on a 1942 short story called It Had to Be Murder. Basically, a dude watches his neighbors, and, like, later they talk about how, like, he's doing it to, like, solve a murder or something like that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a pretty interesting movie, actually. And, yeah, I guess Archie's never gonna have his curtains open ever again.
And he's
right. I wouldn't.
No.
I'd be like, Kate, guess I'm never looking out that window ever again.
No.
And then, you know, as I was rewatching yesterday, I was like, y'all are doing all of this, and Ethel's fully in the sisters right now. Ethel's fully suffering in the sisters, and you guys are doing this.
I mean, of course she is. Ethel's always yeah. left to rot.
So Veronica and Betty talk the next day, saying Archie probably didn't see them.
Yeah, for sure. No.
That's wishful thinking.
Definitely not. That's not why he closed the curtains.
But if he did, he can't blame them, because he was walking around shirtless anyway. And Blanche put in her notes, girl, it's his bedroom.
It's his bedroom.
What do you mean walking around shirtless? Victim blaming.
Exactly.
Archie approaches and asks to speak to Betty alone. When Ronnie leaves, he says that he saw them last night, but he says that he liked it, though. And, I don't know, Archie's got a voyeur thing going on, I guess. They agree that it would be nice if they met at their windows sometime to look at each other. Betty is thrilled.
Because, like, he liked it, but only with Ronnie not yeah. there.
Right! Exactly. Betty is thrilled and says that she'll be wearing something special, and both of them are, like, super, super excited about it. I did love the beginning of this when he was just like, hey, I saw you yesterday. And she's like, oh, that's so weird. What? I wasn't even at home. Who did you see?
That's crazy. I was out.
Must have been a ghost.
Committing crimes. What?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I have an alibi. Veronica was there too.
We were kissing, actually.
Not in my room. Yeah. So
we were comparing lingerie.
Yeah, so that's really embarrassing, and you can go ahead and spread that around. I don't care, because that's how much I wasn't there. Is that I would rather you say that than what we were actually doing.
T.
These actors deserve more money. They deserve more money. I don't know how much they're getting, but the fact that they have to do these things and they have to act out these scripts, give them more.
I like that they hit a stage of radical acceptance where they've just leaned so far into it and they're like, we have to be here. We may as well just have fun doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
Because it's so cringe to watch.
Truly. Truly. And, like, you can tell Archie's just, like, out here trying to... This reminded me... Do you remember in 703 when we laughed and laughed and laughed about Archie's boner scene?
100%. 100%.
I literally was like, Archie's out here popping another bee just talking about this.
Like, we will be collecting our endgame.
It's true.
Which I'm not upset about. Is it hard to watch? Yeah, but we will be getting it.
Correct. All right, so Betty and Archie prepare themselves for looking at each other, and then they meet at the window at midnight. They undress, and there's a super long scene of them just admiring each other. Betty is wearing the lingerie that Veronica lent her.
It goes on for a long time.
It goes a really long time. And she's about to take it off when Hal bursts into her room, and at the same time, Uncle Frank bursts into Archie's room, and then the episode ends. So here's what happened. Here's what happened in real time.
Okay, I want to hear this.
Yes. This scene is so long that I'm looking down at the Discord trying to, like, talk to Blanche and Dave. And we had, like, talked about who was in the guest stars and everything. And I was like, we were like, oh, no Maid Chin. But we did see that Lachlan was in it, which means that Hal is in it, but not Alice and everything. And so, like, I had completely forgotten about the Lachlan thing. And, you know, I'm watching the scene. I'm like, this is taking forever. And I'm, like, looking down at the Discord. I was like, haha, if I had known that Alice was in this episode, I would assume that she would, like, burst in. And Dave goes, no, Hal, we still haven't seen Hal. And I went, oh, no.
Dave catches every little thing.
That's how long this scene was.
Yep.
That's how long this scene was, is that whole thing was able to happen. And I was like, oh, no, Hal's about to burst in, because we have not seen Hal yet today.
Oh, God.
And
okay, but
that's what happened.
Robin, now talk me through what happens in universe. How do they both come to the conclusion that they need to run upstairs and stop their children? Are they both talking to each other outside?
Dude, I wrote the same thing. I wrote, how did this happen at the same time? Did they coordinate?
Or, okay.
How did this happen at the same time?
Okay, so it could be that they were looking, they were looking out a window, and, like, Hal looks up and sees Archie slowly undressing and knows immediately from the way Archie's, like, facing his daughter's bedroom what's happening. And I'm just gonna say,
okay,
that's how it happened, or that they were both, like, talking outside about, like, what bad parents they are, and they were like, oh my god, we can't allow consensual things to happen in our house.
I have a theory.
They are teenagers. Yeah.
Stay with me.
I'm with you.
So here's the thing, is that I would agree with you, but
okay,
it's midnight.
Oh, T, it is midnight.
So theory, I know that we've seen villain meeting Clifford, Werther's, and Featherhead, but I still have my theory that Featherhead invited Frank into the villain meeting, and I wonder if Frank is out here, like, inviting Hal into the villain meeting or something like that. I don't know. I'm just like, it's very shady of them to be out there, and I don't expect Riverdale to explain it to me, but there's definitely a question about how this happened at exactly the same time. And I wonder if they'll have a moment where they're just like, wait, how did you even see that? How did you even know to come up here? Because that's confusing. And I would be interested to know how that happened.
Yes.
Like, is there going to be a mystery about that?
No.
But like, I doubt it. But that is something that they could do because it is confusing as to how that happened.
Like, listen, they were like, oh, this will be funny. And they did not think about it any further.
Straight up. Also, we straight up didn't talk about Ethel's parents at all this episode. Like, or last episode, I think. Like, are we actually ever going to get the answer to Ethel's parents' murder?
Probably later, because you know how this show likes to hold stuff, so.
I hope so. I really do.
Probably around the mid-season we'll get something.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I liked the detail of, like, Betty's heart buttons, that her buttons are the shapes of hearts. And also it made me laugh that Archie stays in his little sockies while he's fully undressing.
Gotta keep your feet warm.
Hilarious. Gotta keep your feet warm. Yeah. Gotta be toasty toes.
Toasty toasty.
And Blanche said,
he's just a little guy.
I knew this was coming because Lachlan was credited and we hadn't seen him yet, but it still jump scared me. And then we got a double jump scare because Uncle Frank was also there.
Yeah, they were like, hope you're hungry. For nothing. Yep. Because you have to look at these
for nothing
horrible men instead of these. Actually, I don't want to look at those teenagers either, but like, actually, okay, yeah. Here's the thing. They're both in their 30s. And Lily's bisexual, so I am looking respectfully.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, I was excited, and we'll talk about the trailer in a second here. I'm like, for the maybe first time this season, like, actively really excited for the next episode.
Really?
I'm excited to see what happens at the dance. Yeah.
All right.
And I want to see the fallout of whatever that was.
Yeah, I also want to see that because I have a feeling that Alice is going to be around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, do you think she's got, like, there has to be.
She's in the trailer.
Repercussions for Betty.
So she's definitely, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Fantastic. I haven't seen the trailer.
Yeah. So now it's time for segments. Our first segment is, what did Blanche think? And Blanche sent us in a voicemail of her thoughts.
Hey, Riverdalians, it's Blanche. So, despite the Uncle Frank in the room, I love, love, loved this episode. Obviously, not too crazy about the Archie plot, but the rest of it just felt so classic. Maybe it's just because last week's episode was so unenjoyable for me with, like, all the stories and the no real plots happening. But I don't know, this episode just felt like coming home after a long day. Again, not the Archie plot, but, like, the Cheryl and Tony scenes, they were so sweet. And we got to see Evelyn again, who I love. And obviously FP! This is like the second time they've even mentioned him since he left. And not only that, we got to see a picture of him in his little 50s outfit. And it just made me so happy. And I'd like to say Gladys next, please. I'm also really excited for next week. The dancing scenes and the trailer were so cute. That's all I really have to say for now, but I just had so much fun writing about this episode, and that really surprised me because, again, Uncle Frank was a big part of this ep, and also there was just a clear lack of Alice and Tabitha, but it was a happy surprise. I had a lot of fun, and yeah, thanks again for having me, and okay, love you, bye!
Thank you, Blanche, and thank you, as always, for everything. You're the best.
So true. And thank you for pinch hitting for me, my friend.
My first segment is, which character needs a hug the most? I'm gonna give it to Cheryl this episode.
Yeah, I think that was the right call. And you know what? Also maybe to Tony, because she's having a lot of weird in the closet and out of the closet feelings.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
My segment is, which MILF was the most badass? Mary.
Yeah.
Obviously. She is the mother and the father that Archie needs. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need anyone else. Yep. She's fantastic.
She shouldn't have brought in Uncle Frank, but she learned the mistake of her ways, and she knows not to do it again.
Mary's like, oh, maybe we don't need a masculine influence in the house.
Yeah. She's like, never mind, actually. I'm raising this boy to be a way better person. Not without Frank, because Frank would have done a great job, too. But she's like,
I'm raising a white guy.
Yeah. What is Sam shipping the most? Sam is shipping Shoni the most this episode. Saw that coming.
Shocking that my wife would ship the sapphic thing. What?
Didn't see this coming. My other segment is asexual Jughead? ? Yep. Why not?
You can pry it out of her cold dead hands.
Uh-huh, exactly. This is the type of episode that I like for Jughead. I like either that he's being extremely very ace, or that they're just not going to talk about his relationships at all.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I love it. You know, Jughead can't spend the whole rest of the season talking about how ace he is. That would be clunky. I'm thrilled that he's just straight up doing other stuff.
I agree.
Love it. Amazing. And now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Veronica and Betty for...
Romeo and Juliet had logistical problems, but they figured it out.
Veronica, they both died.
Not until Act 5.
And as you guys can see, I also cut out the whole, like, thing about how it was after they lost their virginities and stuff, because that was stupid and bad. But I did like this line. I did think the Act 5 thing was funny.
I agree. And mine goes to Jughead for...
This is so boss, boss.
Boss, boss.
I'm a sucker for a repeated word, okay?
Loves an alliteration.
And you know what? There were not a lot of good lines in this episode.
It's true. I did not have that many, to be honest.
Yeah.
Sam's has to go to Cheryl for...
Well, razz my berries and put them in a jelly jar.
You know, Sam is going to be very... If there's another raspberries... line, she's gonna stay consistent, and she's always gonna have the razz my berries line.
If there's one thing my wife is gonna do, it's commit to a bit.
Yeah, it's so true. And Blanche's favorite line word goes to Mary for...
Back off, Frank.
Simple, to the point. I love it.
Agreed.
Yeah. Now for our trailer thoughts. So the blurb for next episode is, fearing that Betty is going down the wrong path, Alice forces her to join the after-school dance show American Grandstand. Meanwhile, Kevin is forced by Tom to join the Riverdale High basketball team, and Veronica finds herself cut off by her parents. I feel like Keller is going to... We're going to get homophobic Keller this episode, which is really sad. But...
Bro, we're doing Hairspray.
Here's the thing. Okay, I literally wrote that in my thing. I was like, I would assume that they were doing Hairspray, but Brittany.
What?
Hey, Mama, welcome to the... 60s! And we're in the 50s.
Well, they can just change it real quick.
You can't do Hairspray.
Hey, Mama, we're in the
50s. They can just change it real quick? Okay.
Boom, done.
Yeah, you're right. That'd be cute. Actually, let's do it. Please. I'd be thrilled.
Thank you.
I would love it to be a musical that I'm, like, familiar with, so I don't have to, like, go and listen to American Psycho, which I honestly didn't even do last time.
And, like, TBH, we already had a drag queen this season, so, like, we're halfway there.
Exactly.
Thanks.
So we see a flyer for the Riverdale Grandstand. It's weird because, like, in the blurb, it says the dance show is called American Grandstand, but that's what the actual one was called. The one in the show is called Riverdale Grandstand.
It's probably renamed for the different regions.
Yeah, it's just weird that in the blurb for the episode, it says American Grandstand because, like, that's not what Betty's joining. She's joining Riverdale Grandstand, right?
Okay, so whoever wrote the copy. Oops.
And it says that it's the 50th episode of the dance show. Okay. But I did think it was cute that on the flyer, the little, like, cartoon girl looks like Comics Betty.
Yeah.
So that was cute. And, yeah, then, you know, my notes, I talked about Hairspray, but alas, that's in the 60s. I still think, like you said, they should just do it.
I don't care.
They're changing other things. Yeah. So Hal and Alice are the hosts, and he says, all right, kids, it's time for the twirl. And we see a bunch of dancing teens, and it really does look like Hairspray. Like, it fully looks exactly like Corny Collins show.
Riddle me this, though, because I haven't watched the trailer.
Yeah.
Is it integrated?
Good question. I can't remember. The characters that we saw were Betty, Veronica, Archie, Cheryl, and Dilton.
Interesting. Okay. We shall see, then.
That's a good question. No, let me look again. That's an important question. One sec.
Because that will tell you if we're doing Hairspray or not.
You're right. Roll call. I'm Amber.
And I'm still Big Red. Just kidding. That's from something else.
And I'm Link. Who plays Link, Archie?
Oh my god, obviously. Though, in a just world, it would 100%, like, Kevin thinks it's him, but it's Reggie.
Right. Oh, for sure.
Like, Kevin thinks it's Link.
But who plays Tracy? Because when they did Heather's, they straight up just had Martha and... Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Ethel be Tracy!
As a fat girl, I'm allowed to say that. Because Ethel is very much Tracy Turnblad. Not only because Shannon Purser is thick.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
But also because that's that character.
Yeah. The thing is that, like, when they did Heather's, like, Martha is the character like that. And they just straight up didn't cast anyone as Martha. Do you remember that? And then at the end, they're like, Martha, are you free tonight? Or whatever.
And they were like, where's Martha?
And no one's playing Martha.
Yeah.
I'm like, who are you talking to? Anyway, sorry, I'm still mad about that. Is it integrated? It is.
In case anyone's wondering, being friends with a theater kid is like this all the time.
Yeah. It is integrated, Brittany.
Fantastic. Okay, so then maybe we're not doing Hairspray.
We might not do Hairspray. So yeah, we see Veronica and Archie there. We see Cheryl Dilton. And then we get another shot of Cheryl in a different outfit. So this might be going on for more than one day.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Mostly we see a lot of dancing in this trailer. Betty's in the audience and she walks up and she says, "You cool cats want to see what a real twirl looks like?" And then everyone is horrified. We see Alice in front of Betty. Betty's laughing and Alice goes, "Cut to commercial!" And it says, RIVW, technical difficulties. And my guess, if I had to guess, is that she like flashed her like new lingerie. Like she like pulled up her skirt or something.
Okay, my guess was that she went to Tony for sexy dance advice.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Just to scandalize everyone by
either way,
dressing or by like...
Everyone's like, ma!
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, either way, I'm actually excited about next episode. I love it.
I'm a sucker for musical stuff. And so, yes. Yeah, same.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
Thank you so much to those who shared space with us while we recorded this podcast. Thanks to my dog. He barked a little bit, but that's okay. And my aunt, she's outside, but... still thanks to her.
Dilly's like, I'm here. And in case you guys didn't...
Yeah, but you were bad.
That I'm here, I will be barking.
I will be barking. And thanks to Sam and Emily?
Yes, thanks to Sam and Emily. Also thanks to our cats, especially Evie, who has been sitting outside the closed door, absolutely horrified that the door is in fact closed.
Sorry, Peeve.
Thank you to Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, for writing our beat-by-beat notes for us. Very kind and iconic.
You're the best. Thank you so much. If you're a fan of The 100, we'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4-7 as they were airing, and now we're going back to the good old days. Catch up before Riverdale's over, because then we are continuing on. We are on hiatus for Riverdale right now, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's a good thing that the CW is going bye-bye, so then we don't have to torture ourselves anymore, you know?
It's almost over.
And pay your writers.
Yes.
The stuff I have seen on Twitter about people who worked at the CW who were treated badly. Pay your writers. Okay.
Saw that coming.
If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we'd like to talk about that show too. We are in the middle of season 4. Well, not in the middle, but we're covering season 4 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Also on hiatus. Sorry about that. But I genuinely can't do all the things at once. So excited to keep going with that once school ends for me. Maybe we can keep doing some stuff when I have a little bit more time. Or just straight up when Riverdale's over. If you're a fan of Lost, we like to talk about that show too. That one is ongoing, but it comes out once a month. And it is our longest, most big brain podcast. We have guests over there. It's a spoiler section at the end. So if you want to listen along for the first time while you watch for the first time, that would mean the world to me. And we're in season 4. Have the best time. The next episode that comes out is The Constant.
Oh,
so catch up.
My wife is a guest on that, and it's also the best episode of the show, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok. Our TikTok is very cute. Please. You guys gotta follow it.
Thanks. Brittany will one day send me a new font to use because she told me my font was bad, but then she never gave me a new one.
I got COVID, you little bitch!
That was weeks ago!
Well, that's going to be my excuse for everything for the foreseeable future.
All right.
Thank you.
Our Patreon is patreon.com/theaficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating. It's expensive with our money, and it's also expensive with our time, so we would really appreciate it, and it would mean a lot to us. Check out our small businesses, if not, or just recommend us to a friend, because that's free.
Yay! You can follow me on Twitter at Britannia, which is BRITTANIA with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey, that's RobynEJEFFREY pretty much everywhere. Next episode is episode 707. It's called Dirty Dancing, which was a 1987 American romantic drama dance film starring Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey. It tells the story of Frances Baby Houseman, a young woman who falls in love with the dance instructor Johnny Castle at a vacation resort.
Wait, Robin, you've seen Dirty Dancing, right?
Nope.
Robin, watch Dirty Dancing. You will like it.
If I can find the time.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, love you. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.